So in this text called Manashodhanam or purification of mind, we have studied that there are two kinds of impurities. One is the inner agitation or disturbance, which is then is cause of the outer negativities. When my mind is internally disturbed, then I express anger and hate and selfishness and jealousy, and all those negatives come out from the inner disturbance. So the inner disturbance of the mind can be overcome by meditation, which we have been studying all these years. Through regular practice of meditation and also prayer, also going to the Lord, and whether it's a temple or church or mosque, but approaching the Lord with humility and devotion also helps to remove the inner agitation. But meditation is the fastest way to quieten the mind and make it single-pointed. Meditation is the fastest way to quieten the mind. The outer disturbances like jealousy, greed, anger, hatred, and all, we have been doing one by one, and the teacher has given us various negative qualities that we need to overcome. In the past few weeks, we have been covering it. In verse number 20, which we did last week, we only did the first quality, and that is shoka moho. We'll chant the verse. Four negative qualities that are addressed in this verse. Anvikshikaya shoka moho. Shikaya shoka moho. Dambham mahadupasaya. Yogantaraya namaunena. Hinsam kayadya nihaya. Kayadya nihaya. So, last week we had studied shoka moho, delusion, fear, and sorrow. They can be removed by right knowledge, which we had covered in detail for half an hour, so I won't go over that. You can either read it in the book or you can listen to my talks on firstpower.info. Last week we went into detail about this. So the other three we are going to work on is dambham. Dambham means hypocrisy. How do we remove hypocrisy? Mahad upasaya. By approaching and serving wise people. So by in the company of the wise people, especially when you go with an attitude of humility and service, then only your hypocrisy can be removed. And then yogantarayana, obstacles in yoga, obstacles in meditation. Because there are various obstacles that come when we sit to meditate. So how do we overcome them? By silence. And then the fourth one the teacher has covered is himsa. Himsa means violence. How do you remove violence? Kaya, adi, anahiya. The body, etc. By controlling the body and other functions, you remove violence. So let us talk about hypocrisy or dambham. Hypocrisy is a very common illness. So we all suffer from that because we always want to project something that I am not. And we constantly have this mask that we put on, because we feel that we are not good enough. And especially in the business world, you know, you have to project that you are great and you are this and you are that. Or when you are in sales, I was reading this cartoon. This man comes, you know, to a salesman and says, you know, my wife and I are going to come here and tell him my car is completely broken. It's not working and I have to buy a new car from you. So he says, you know, I know about your car. Won't that be lying? He says, lying? How long have you been in sales? So this hypocrisy where I project something where I am not to get some material benefit or to impress somebody else or to show off is one of the negative qualities. And if we see, and if you look in children, if you see a child, The child is very innocent. If his child is a few months old, he or she is lying there. They don't have any hypocrisy. They don't need to project anything. They don't need to show off. The child is happy in its own bliss, in its own. It's only as we develop an ego that I am somebody, and then I have to show that I am even better than what I am. And if there is a competition, then I have to show that I am better than this competition and I can fight them and I can beat them. So then this again leads to an attitude of competition, attitude of cheating, attitude of lying, attitude of, you know, violence. Violence may not be physical, but as we'll talk about, violence could be at the mental level where I hate somebody who is trying to compete. So they say, remove that by company of the wise. And what we see is that in Gita, there is a very famous line, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. True wisdom should give you modesty. If wisdom gives you arrogance, then that's not really wisdom. And if you look at any great saint who is worth his salt, they were ultimate in modesty, in humility. They never projected themselves. They never showed off. They never tried to force their view on anybody. Look at Jesus, epitome. Look at Buddha. Look at Shankaracharya, Raman Maharishi, all the great saints, Guru Nanak. They were all so humble, so modest, and they knew so much. And that is the great thing about them. When you go and talk to them, you realize they know so much. The example I can think of is Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of our Chinmaya mission. And he runs the entire mission. There are 300 centers throughout the world like these. And they all report to him. And there's close to 100,000 members who all look up to him. And if you ever approach him, and if you listen to him speaking on the stage, he has such profound knowledge. He has so much memory. He has so many of the texts memorized completely. And the way he is able to explain the most difficult concepts in a very easy manner. But when you sit and talk to him, he's so humble, so modest. Anybody can go and approach him. He looks so approachable. And when you look at him and you meet him, you would never think that this person is the worldwide head of this huge organization. So when I feel that I am somebody great or I am somebody special or I am trying to show off, and the best thing is to go and talk to these saints. Look at Mother Teresa, look at Saint Francis, look at Eckhart Tolle. They all are so humble, so modest. So they say if you want to remove hypocrisy and arrogance, just approach the saints, serve them, be in their company and see how they conduct themselves and how they deal with the world. Then the next one is an obstacle, is the obstacle in meditation. And here the teacher talks about what is the obstacles in meditation. And they say the one of the major obstacles, at least I have not reached it, but if I ever do, I'll let you know, is that you acquire some great spiritual powers. They call them siddhis. And people do that. You know, when they have advanced in meditation, they can walk on water, they can read people's mind, they can, you know, what they think comes true. And they think, that is great. If I can do that, if I can read people's mind, that would be wonderful. Believe me, it will be torture. You can't even handle your own thoughts, you know. And imagine everybody's thoughts you can read, and somebody has anger, and somebody has vulgar thoughts, and somebody has jealous thoughts, and greedy, and hatred, and all those thoughts are coming. It would be horror. It would be miserable. So it is better I cannot read anybody else's mind, because even just to handle my own mind is enough problems. You know, our own mind is enough to give us enough problems. I don't need to read other people's mind. Or other people say, what I wish should come true. If I have that power, then how wonderful it would be. So they tell this story about this yogi, this great meditator. He sat for years deep meditation, intense meditation, and he was praying to a particular form of God, and so God Shiva was the particular, and God appeared before him. He wanted to see God, he didn't want to just realize. And so the Lord, whatever you wish, if you put enough effort, the Lord fulfills your every wish. And so God appeared before him in that particular form. He says, what would you like? He says, Lord, I always wanted this power that whatever I wish should come true. Lord said, are you sure you want that? Yes, Lord, I definitely want it. Okay, tathastu, so be it. And he asked for his wish, the Lord gave it, and the Lord disappeared. So now he was very happy, you know, aha, now whatever I wish will come true. So he says, I have been meditating for so many years and just barely living on fruits and berries. I'm so hungry. Last several months, I haven't moved from this spot. I want food. I want all the world's best foods. In the plate, they all appear. And he's sitting under a tree. All the Chinese, Japanese, American, Mexican, whatever he wants, everything is there. And he's so very happy, he starts eating. But then he says, you know, there are crows on this tree. I hope the crows don't drop their droppings on it. And suddenly hundreds of crows appeared. He says, oh God, what a mistake I made. I have to be very careful. You know, I can't be thinking like that. He said, at least thank God I'm safe. You know, all these years I was under the tree. And I hope this tree doesn't fall on me. And So the thing is that if you have these kind of powers, they can become obstacles, especially when you start showing off, you know, and people do, and lot, in fact, in this world, they say, unless you have the spiritual powers, people don't come to you. And so people, to get a large number of followers, will start showing these powers off, you know, I can do this, I can magically produce this or magically do that. In fact, there was a great saint named Ramakrishna Paramhans, who was the teacher of Vivekananda, who first brought this knowledge to the West, to India. And so this teacher, Ramakrishna, was a very simple priest. He was not even very learned, but great realized master. And there was one of his students who was studying with him. And the student says, I don't think I can learn much from this teacher. You know, he doesn't seem to be a great scholar. I'm going to go out and learn more. So for 10 years, he wandered from place to place talking to great yogis. And after 10 years, he comes back to the teacher, bows down to him. So teacher says, oh, welcome back. Where were you this 10 years? He said, I have been studying all kinds of yoga. I have great power now. He says, really? What power do you have? He says, you see that river? I can walk across the water and I can walk back. He was very proud of his ability. So the teacher said, okay, let me see. And so he did. He walked across the water, walked on the water, and walked back. And he thought the teacher would be very impressed. So the teacher said, you spent 10 years in acquiring this power. He says, yes. He says, you know, this boatman, I can give him a quarter, 25 cents, and he'll take me across the river and bring me back. So you wasted 10 years in doing something which I can do for a quarter. So the point is that these powers may come to you as you are advanced in meditation. They may come to you, but be silent about them. Don't show off, because they can become an obstacle in your spiritual pursuit, in your spiritual journey, because then you will want to show off. It's like, say, if you can sing, right? Anybody you catch, you catch him and say, you want to hear me sing? If you have learned some new song, or if your kid learns to play the violin, any poor unsuspecting relative who comes to the house, he has to listen to the kid playing violin out of tune. So you want to show it off, any new power you have. So that's why they say be careful, be silent. If you have these powers, think of them as God's grace. Oh Lord, it is because of you I have got it. And they can produce ego or arrogance in you, that I have this great power, and B, the people then will only be impressed if you show more and more powers. So they will ask you, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? And so your spiritual progress will be blocked, because then you'll be stuck. Because this is like a halfway mark or path, you know, it's on the path. You get these, you say, let them be. You know, don't show off. Be silent about them. Because if you start showing off, then it will affect your spiritual progress. Be silent. Don't even tell people you have it, because it is the Lord's grace, and let it be and you move on, because that's not my purpose in meditation. It's not to get this power, it's to know who I am, to realize the self. Another interpretation that I came up with, it may be right or may be wrong, is that the main obstacle in meditation is rapidity of the mind. The mind runs. Mind just... The more you sit in meditation, otherwise those thoughts will never come to you. But in meditation, any and every random thought will come, and any and every... So how do you overcome them? By silence. By practicing silence during meditation, by quietening the mind. But also teachers tell us that set aside some time in the week when, okay, I will not talk. Maybe half a day on Saturday or on Friday or some particular day of the week. You say, for these 4 hours, or if you can do 8 hours the whole day, I will not speak to anybody. And in that silence, you can then feel the inner silence. And then that silence gets transferred to meditation. But unfortunately, what some people do is they have this silent period, but then they take to writing notes. There was this lady one time who had said, half a day on Saturday, I won't talk. But then she'd be furiously writing notes. Do this. Don't do this. Why did you do? So, you know, then it doesn't serve the purpose. I mean, if you have something really important to tell, you can tell. But practice silence, where then your mind gets under your control. So that's what he says, that obstacles in meditation, like great powers or agitation of the mind, should be controlled by silence. And then himsa. Himsa is violence, the last one. How do you overcome that? By controlling kaya adi, means body, etc. Why do they say body, etc.? Because there are 3 ways we can inflict violence upon anybody. One is, of course, by action. You know, you can hit somebody, you can slap somebody, you can take a gun and shoot them. The second is by speech. And that we are guilty of a lot. You know, we tell something to somebody, tell them off, get angry and then say something, and then we resent afterwards, or we regret, you know, I shouldn't have done that. And words once spoken cannot be taken back. So they say be very cautious, be very careful. And if you do even get some anger or something, don't speak. You know, like we tell our children, count to 10 or take a few breaths. So consciously control and see what is coming out of my mouth. Then also by controlling your thoughts. There was a teacher who comes here once a year. He speaks in Hindi, and he used to say that thinking negative thoughts about somebody is also violence. Even though you may not speak a word to him, even though you may not touch him or do anything, but even thinking negative thoughts is a form of violence, and is also a form of negative karma. And it could be negative thoughts about anybody. It could be negative thoughts about a person or a community or a particular country or a particular group of people. Or even if you're working for one company, thinking negative about other company, I hope that company's business goes down. So thinking of negative thoughts also creates negative karmas. Because A, it agitates your mind, it disturbs your mind. When I'm thinking, you know, violent thoughts about somebody else, may that person suffer or may he go to hell. You know, we always think like that. So be very cautious. And so one has to be consciously alert about what I am thinking, what I am speaking, and what I am doing. Because violence in any form is not right. Yeah, self-defense is a different thing. You know, there is somebody is coming to attack you, and you may have to do something in defense. But even there should not be an attitude of anger or hatred towards that person. And only the least possible means should be applied, as much as possible, where I should not hurt the other person, but I should protect myself. But people say, in the business world, you know, you have to have aggression, you have to be violent, you have to push other people down, step on their head to climb up, and then you have to use all means, you know, whatever way you can speak good about yourself and speak bad about the competition. And if I don't have this attitude of, you know, competition in my mind, how am I going to succeed? In the business or the material world also, this is wrong. Because when you have that attitude, then automatically all the other bad qualities follow. When I have negative thoughts, then it leads to negative speech. It leads to negative action, you know, like anger, greed, hatred, jealousy. All of them come out. Starting their origin is on the wrong kind of thoughts. But we say that for a spiritual seeker, if you are on this spiritual path and you want to evolve, then it is absolutely mandatory to not have any violence, neither in your action, nor in your speech, nor even in your thoughts. Like in the action, as a spiritual seeker, I feel that even killing another animal or causing another animal to be killed for my food is also a form of violence. And as a spiritual seeker, because that kind of diet does stimulate the mind, so it should be avoided as much as possible. Of course, then you say, what about plants? Well, we have to eat plants to survive. You cannot eat, you know, mud or stones. But even there, unnecessary violence to plants, just unnecessarily cutting leaves or just breaking, you know, a branch off. In fact, the same teacher who was talking to us about violent thoughts, he says that even avoid stepping on grass. Because even the grass has life, and when you're stepping on it, yeah, if you have no choice, there is a picnic going on or something, or golf you're playing, there you have to. But say if I have to cross and there is a patch of grass in my way, but if there is a little longer way to take by cement, I try my best to take that. Avoid that, because the grass also has life. It is also feels the pain. So being conscious, or if an insect is passing by, it doesn't bother you, just unnecessarily stepping on it. Yeah, if your house, if there are ants, you know, who are going to, like we live in an anthill, especially in Northeast Bakersfield, we live in an anthill, and suddenly the whole, you know, closet will be filled with ants. There you don't have a choice, you know, you don't want them, you know, filling up your food. You have to call the pest control. But an insect going by, just to stomp him, you know, kids sometimes do that, just step on that. Avoid that. If that insect is not bothering you, is not a pest, you know, leave them alone. So be consciously aware that how can I avoid causing pain to others by my speech. You know, it says there was one saint who said, don't even look at anybody with hatred, or even, you know, even have, you know, first of all, keep your eyes partially closed. And then when you look at somebody, look with love, look with compassion, smile. So this can only come when you have self-knowledge. And what is the self-knowledge? As we have talked about many times, that there is only one reality, which we call God as Brahman, which is the all-pervading consciousness. And me and everybody is that one consciousness expressing in different forms, just as one mud expresses in different parts, you know, as the saucer and the plate and the vase, just as one gold expresses in different ornaments, just as one ocean expresses in different waves. So there is one God, one consciousness expressing in all, and me. So all of us are that divinity. And we are all one. And once you have that understanding, that whoever I see, everybody is me. I'm not separate from them. The saints could practice that. Jesus could do that. Buddha could do that. All these great saints could do that. So start by practicing it in your house. You know, you love I love my spouse. I, you know, see the oneness. And my children and my mother-in-law, father-in-law. That becomes another problem, or daughter-in-law. So see the divinity in them all. and then slowly extend that to the neighbors, extend that to the world, extend that to the community. And so by self-knowledge, all of them can be cured by the first one, which is self-knowledge. Knowing who I am and knowing what is this world and knowing my relationship. And that is what we are studying in this text. That is what we practice in meditation. So consciously, by being alert, all these negativities can be overcome. It's a very beautiful verse. We can talk a lot more, but I thought I'll give everybody an opportunity to speak.
Once it comes out, I mean, how do you get back on or erase?
No, you can't erase the thought, but at least become conscious of it and don't support it. Because the thought is supported by you. The thought, even though we think my mind has a power of its own, I am the one who is giving power to the mind. It is me as the consciousness. So become aware of that. That, okay, my mind at this moment is developing a negative thought. But I don't have to encourage it. Like if there is a weed growing, you don't water it and give it, nourish it. You know, you either pull it out or, you know, or put some herbicide or just let it die by itself. We don't support it. So the thought, when it is not supported, when it's not nourished, then dies by itself. So just become aware of and practice mind observation throughout the day. Wherever, whatever I'm doing, a part of my attention should be what is my mind doing at this moment. Like at this moment, you can say, okay, my mind, I'm listening, I'm absorbing. But when I'm silent, is my mind angry? Is my mind agitated? Is my mind peaceful? My mind calm? So they say a watched mind is a quiet mind. So get into the habit of watching the mind. Be the watcher, absolutely. Be the watcher of the mind. Yes, no, that's very true. Be the watcher. It's absolutely true. And witness it. Just watch. Okay, what is my mind doing? Okay, just be. That's very powerful. Swami Ishwarananda actually told me that one time a few years ago. So that is the most powerful spiritual practice you can do, is just observe the mind. No, while you continue to do everything, once you have done that in meditation, then it becomes automatic. You then, a part of your attention is always there. And then slowly you can then distance yourself from all the activities. You're doing the activities, but it doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes it happens that I can be a witness. Sometimes I get totally involved. But the more you practice, you can get the witness attitude. In fact, that is what we'll be practicing today in meditation. We have a new technique of meditation that Swamiji taught us on Saturday. So we'll share that with everybody. Did you have a comment or question, sir? Don't watch the nightly news. No, really, watching TV is a very poisonous activity. TV watching should be banned. Nobody should, especially the nightly news is the worst, because you watch the 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock news and then you go to bed. Then your mind is just filled with those negative thoughts. And especially with the TV, what happens is they take you right to that spot. And there has been a bombing and they'll show you that, or they'll show you the person, or there has been a building collapse or a shooting, and they'll go into details about that person's life and show his picture, have interview with the family, and then interview with the person who was shot or his wife. And so that's how they sell the news. So what I try to do, I know it's an old habit, I read the newspaper. Because in the newspaper, first of all, it's not that vivid. You're not seeing it, you know, you're just reading about it. So you can distance yourself. That way you're still in touch with the news, but it's not taking you over. Or if you have one of these AP or one of these programs in your cell phone or in your iPad, just skim through that, through the headlines, and read some of the news. You don't have to go into details of the video of the shooting or the video of the, you know, the building collapse and all that. So watching TV it puts too much negativity in your mind. So it should not be done, especially not the news. If you want to watch TV, be selective. If there is a good program on PBS, I know PBS is a bad word in these days, but it's a beautiful channel. They have such beautiful programs for children, such wonderful programs for adults, or National Geographic or History Channel. So be selective, that if there is something I wish to watch, it should be I should choose it. The news, it's just it's a horrible thing. It should not be done. Definitely the news should not be watched. And especially the nightly news, it's because that whole night you are thinking about those thoughts. And you want your mind at night at least to be peaceful. So get a habit of reading a newspaper in the morning. That's the best. Or just, you know, in the computer, just go through the headline. So you know what is happening. I'm not saying that you shouldn't know the news, but don't watch TV. Cut down the TV watching. That's very harmful, I think. Even otherwise, you know, these programs, we put it on the 6 o'clock news, and then it goes on to the 7 o'clock show and the 8 o'clock show and 9 o'clock. And before you know, it's 11 o'clock and you've been on the TV, on the idiot box for 5 hours. So that's what they say. An average child in America spends 5 hours in front of a screen. 5 hours out of, you know, 16 hours of waking, one third of his life is spent either in front of a computer screen or a phone or a TV. Actually, probably is more. I would say it's more than that. Was 5 hours was on the day when they only had TV. But now when they have all this, I'm sure it is 7 to 8 hours, and it is really bad. It's not good. Reading books is very nice, because with the book, you can choose the book you want to read. You can put it down when you want, and then you can, you know, digest the thoughts. So develop the habit of reading and avoid TV watching. I actually hardly ever watch any TV at all. I may watch some sports once in a while because I like, you know, particular in the playoffs or something. But I very much restrict it because I think it's quite a harmful. Yeah, that's true. A thought initially is only a simple thought, but when you repeatedly dwell upon it, then it becomes firmly embedded in your intellect. And then when repeatedly practiced, then becomes a vasana, becomes a habit. So initially starts with a negative thought, then it's like water, you know, going like the Grand Canyon. Over the years, it made this huge. So repeatedly thinking the thought makes a groove in your mind, and actually ultimately it can result in a change in your DNA. That's absolutely right, because thinking negative constantly will result in negative speech, negative actions, and then repeated negative actions will give you negative vasanas, the tendencies, and then these are ones you carry for multiple lifetimes. You can't get rid of them, so that's another thing. But also, recently I was reading and somebody was telling me that through meditation, you can actually change your DNA. Dean Ornish and a lot of other researchers have done studies where they show that people who regularly meditate actually can modify their own DNA. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah, there's a lot of literature on that.
Yeah, that's acquired from when you were in the room. So, I got a lot of money for that.
Emotional DNA.
A lot of,
oh yeah, and in womb, in vitro education is very important. Mm-hmm. What the mother emotions she feels get transmitted to the child, and the child instantly picks them up. So they say it's very important for a mother who is pregnant to have positive emotions, read good books, do regular prayers and meditation, and think about God, because those emotions get transmitted to the child. In fact, we have stories in our, like the Mahabharata, where one was a child who actually learned when the father was telling the mother something, she actually wasn't listening, but the child was listening, and he actually learned from the father how to fight a particular form of warfare. So the point is that there is a lot of value in antenatal education, not only, you know, yeah, so the child can be educated in the womb. So the kind of thoughts a mother has a profound effect on the child. That's why, you know, women who are, you know, unhappy or on drugs, or you find that the children are born with so many disturbances, you know. It's not only the drugs, but even those who have a lot of negative thoughts or are abused and mistreated, the children grow up with the negativities too.
You stop the meditation, or you continue by it, or you wait for the next.
No, you continue it, because the thoughts will keep on coming, and then the mind is very smart. The mind will say, I know how to disturb this guy's meditation by producing a negative thought, and he will get up. Because the mind doesn't like to sit and do nothing. The mind wants to run and do things. And also the mind knows that the more you meditate, the weaker the mind becomes. So the mind doesn't like you to meditate. So then he will say, oh, I know how to get this guy to stop by creating a negative thought. So you, if you have decided I'm going to sit for 20 minutes, sit for 20 minutes. Even if the mind is running, if all the negative, you say my time is 6 to 6:30, I'm not going to get up. And when you do that, just the discipline of sitting every day, even if your mind is agitated, even if you don't reach the truth, even if it doesn't become silent, just sit. And slowly you will find that your mind will say, so I can't disturb this guy. You know, he's going to keep sitting 30 minutes anyway. So, no, really, the whole thing is a trick of the mind. It is a constant effort to, and then you have to make the mind your friend. Don't make it an enemy. You know, why is this negative thought coming? You say, okay, mind, yeah, this negative thought is there, but now is not the time. Now we are thinking about God, or we are thinking about the, and start chanting the mantra loudly. You can start chanting your mantra, or taking, so watch your breath, or do something that will quieten the mind and take your attention away from that thought. But don't give up the meditation. Yeah. Or even if you're lying and you're not ready to get up, just start chanting your mantra as you're lying down. And just start remembering God. And then your mind will become quiet, and then you can sit up and meditate too. So that's also good. The idea is the first thought in the morning should be the name of God. You should have a mantra and get up in the morning with that chanting of the mantra. And it has to have God's name associated. It's very important. As soon as you get up, my first thought should be that. And the last thought before I go to bed, when I lie down, you know, just relax your body, observe your breath like we do, just watch your breath. And as the breath comes in and out, chant the mantra, the name of God, and think about it with attention, not mechanically, not om, 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 not like that, but with attention, om, or whatever your mantra is. Do it slowly and with attention, and then you will find that your mind, so the last thought of your night will be the name of God, not the evening news, not the 11 o'clock news. So that is the idea. So the last thought before you sleep should be the name, his name. Could be her name, it could be the mother goddess, you know, we have so many. So, God's name, and when you wake up, you should wake up with that same mantra. And by visualizing, say you're doing a mantra of Jesus, the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, then you should visualize that Jesus' form, or if you Hail Mary, Mother of God, then visualize her sweet form, how loving and compassionate. So, have that vision in your mind as you chant. Yeah, develop a relationship of love with a particular form, but then do not limit God to only that form. I love Jesus, but Jesus alone is not God. You know, but then you become fanatical, you know, or that Allah alone is right and everybody, or Krishna alone is. So that form represents the formless. The Jesus represents the Father in heaven, represents that. So take that form. And then transfer it to the whole universe, that the whole universe is Jesus, and then only. Then you don't become fanatical. And then all forms are good. If somebody worships Krishna, that's good. Somebody worships Allah, that is good. Somebody worships the formless, is that good? And somebody doesn't believe in God, that's good too. You know, as long as he's a good person. So you slowly remove fanaticism. That's very important.
So it's kind of like saying, God is in me, but I ain't God. God is in you, but you ain't God. That's basically what...
True. As the limited individuality, I am not God, yes. But the power in me is that same divinity. And the whole practice of meditation is to become one with that God. And then you can say, the Father in heaven and I are one, which Jesus could say, because he had become one with that. So you and I can also reach that state, which this great saint, which Buddha called Nirvana, with the Upanishad say, you tatvamasi, you are that. When they say you are that, it does not mean you the individuality, but you that eternal truth. And we are all that, because we are all that one truth.
Perfect condition.
Yes, that's a saint. That becomes a saint or a prophet.